Hi everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We are so happy that you're joining us, and we are continuing on our theme of this month in June of high school, teens kind of subjects, all of those things that there's not a lot of resources for. So I'm really excited for all the guests that we have. And tonight we're going to talk about tools for helping your homeschool teen develop learning independence. And our guest tonight is Ruth Mead. Welcome, Ruth, and thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you. It's a blessing to be here and be able to share some of the things that I've learned along the way.
Yeah, and you've learned in a lot of places. You were a special ed teacher, and you were a professor, and so you have a lot of different angles you're coming with and bringing information to parents. So can you tell us a little bit more about that, your experience, and just your passion for special education, and just why this topic? I know we had talked about certain topics, and this was one of them that we talked about, and why is this close to your heart?
Well, I'll tell you, I was born a missionary kid in Ethiopia. My parents were missionaries, and then we moved to Canada, and I had a hard time adjusting and learning how to do things when we moved back, and so those teen years were really turbulent for me.
Yeah.
That started it, and then that just gave me a passion for working with other people who struggled and had a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get the picture of the special ed piece until after I graduated from Bible college. I ended up going and working in a home for abused and neglected girls for 7 years, and a good percentage of the girls we worked with, I mean, I lost count of the number of calls we got for, yes, this girl is 14 years of age and really struggling with life. So just developed a real love for teens with that, and then the whole academic piece that went with it.
Right.
A lot of these kids, they bounce so much that their academics went. And so I ended up going on and getting a degree in special ed. And then ended up teaching in the public school system for 7 years in the upper elementary grades. And then in the junior, I guess that's my niche. Those crazy middle schoolers that nobody knows how to do.
Exactly.
And ended up working with them, and then switched back and became a professor of special ed. And then what was really nice, for a little while there, they asked me to help out at the academy. So I was working part-time down at the academy and then coming right up to the university with live examples to teach. And so that's kind of where I got this whole just love working with this age group and trying to help them develop their independence and confidence, especially if they've got disabilities. You know, helping them to see what they can do instead of what they can't do and go with it.
So important. Exactly. Yeah. I'm excited for what you have to share. I've already looked at all your slides, and so hang on. You're gonna get some really good information here about really how to practically really help your teen, and you even put in some safeguards with, you know, if look for this and don't expect that. So that's really good. As parents, we sometimes have our high expectations or our expectations are too low, and we got to make them meet in the middle. So, so we also want to thank Seven Sisters Homeschool for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. We'll hear more about them about halfway through the program. But shall we get started with the slides?
Sure. Let's just kind of run down through them. And if we need to stop or if people have questions, we can do that too.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. So
basically, if you're looking at wanting to develop independence, there's two main goals when we're dealing with this. And I'm going to call it self-management, because we all have to learn how to manage ourselves. That's part of being successful in life. So our first goal is, I'll get you to advance that for me. We want it to be teen driven. They need to be able to get to a point where they're like, oh, you know what? This is my life. I'm going to own it and take on these kinds of things. So we can't assume that they're going to do this on their own. We have to talk to them a little bit and say, okay, we don't want to be the one outside standing there. And I've said this to teens and their parents, even just this spring when I was consulting with a parent, the teen was looking at it. I said, do you really want your mom standing beside you for the rest of your life and tell you what to do? She's like, no, I'm on my own. I said, okay, so here's some things you got to do. So taking it from somebody outside to intrinsic what I'm doing inside.
That's a good way to rephrase it for them too, because they often don't see that. They just like, I just want my independence, but you can't give them their independence until that switch gets made. And so to frame it that way for them is important.
Right. Absolutely. So then the second goal is for the parent not to have to constantly be standing there saying all these different things, and the two kind of build with each other, but you want the kid with the team to want this. So,
right.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so when I just threw in this verse in here, what a lot of what I do with my consulting and the different things on my website and stuff, my goal has been to make it from a biblical perspective.
Yeah.
And like a lot of homeschooling parents, especially the Christian parents, are doing this. You know, I'm hearing about all these things that teachers do and stuff like that, but is it really biblical? And there's a ton of verses in the Bible that show us very clearly, yeah, these are things that are very biblical. So like 1 John 1 shows us the visual, auditory, kinesthetic, tactile. I'm not going to quote that one right now for the sake of time, but look that up and you've got it right there in the Bible. 2,000 years ago, God showed us we can use all these methods for teaching. But
right.
for this self-management thing, let's look at Galatians 6. And it says each of us needs to bear, you know, take on our own work. And then he can boast in himself alone and not in his neighbor. You don't want somebody coming behind you and saying, well, I did that.
Right.
We get to take our own responsibility for what we do.
That's so good. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as your teens become adults, that you want that more and more.
Yes, absolutely. So as we're going through here, we got some terms we're going to just use interchangeably. So we'll just screen through those really quickly here.
Yeah.
Well, self-control, self-regulation.
Yeah, we hear a lot
we
of that.
Do that in the literature. So keep on going down there.
Yeah.
Self-management, we would prefer to say it's that. We're learning to manage ourselves, our behavior, and it's not just about anger and behavior. It's about all the other little things you do every day.
Yes.
That if you start to control these little things and think about setting these little things up, then you're not going to get into behavior issues. You're not going to get frustrated. You're not going to get angry because you thought about these steps that could save you frustration later.
Right.
So we're going to just call it self-management.
Okay. That's very good.
Yeah.
All right.
So a quick definition for self-management that comes from the literature, personal and systematic application of behavior change strategies that will result in desired modification of our behavior.
And that's something we all need, isn't it?
Yeah, and this phrase was coined way back in 1987, so it's been around for a while in the special ed literature.
Very good.
All right, so we can look at this and be very, very simple with it. And so go ahead and just fill it that all in.
Okay.
For example, it's as simple as teaching your teen to put a note on the fridge to remind themselves that they got to take the garbage out. Or if they're using a calendar on their fridge for everybody, okay, folks, have you gone and checked the fridge?
Right.
and eventually you want to get them to the point where you're not saying that have you gone and checked the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone and checked the fridge themselves. So this is, again, learning how to do that. But typically when you're working, especially with kids with disabilities, it's a little bit more complex. It's got to be a little bit more structured in how we teach them how to do these things.
Right. And so you start with the simple things and you get to the more complex as they get,
right.
get there.
Right.
And then independence happens after that.
And it can be as simple as just teaching them how to do that note first. And some people might be, that's too simple. Well, actually, if that's a real struggle for your kid and they get it, then celebrate it.
Right.
You know, celebrate those
exactly.
things, and then that will give them more intrinsic motivation to go, oh, I got that, so I can do this now. So
that feeling inside, I've done something.
Yeah,
so true.
So this particular slide is just five advantages, and we're just going to say them real quick, and then we're going to actually start to develop them. So there's five advantages to being able to
I think you're going to elaborate on these, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to elaborate. So we're just going to go ahead and run down all five of them here real quick. So basically, we're going to help our teen develop and deal with behaviors that might go unnoticed by the parent.
Yeah.
We're going to help our teen develop and deal with behaviors that are unobserved by the parent. We're going to promote generalization of behavior, which means
that's
they can apply this concept to other situations. Yeah, with a similar structure or symbol going on. Then we're going to allow for more effective home learning in the environment and in the teaching.
Yeah.
And it advances this team to ultimately having the goal of being independent with their education and with their life.
Yeah. So definitely things we want.
So let's define these a little bit more closely here.
Yeah. Okay.
The first one is we want to help this team develop, deal with behaviors that go unnoticed by the parent. But might be observed, but might not. And we as parents have to pick our battles. Too much behavior is being admitted by the in the home for the parent mm-hmm. to catch every single thing that's going on. And I gotta fix this. And, yeah, you can't. You just can't.
Yeah. Well, it would drive you. It drives you crazy because right. you're thinking, I have to like micromanage this child, and that's the last thing you want to be doing. You want to be working your way out of that.
Right. So there's different things that we might not notice that they're doing or missing. It's like, you know, you get to the end of the day mm-hmm. and you realize they haven't picked up all the stuff that you told them to, and
right.
you don't want to have to go back at midnight and say, okay, now's the time to go pick this up.
Right.
So, exactly. But also just things that are going on in their hearts. So,
oh, including, yes, very like, true. And you just, yeah.
Yeah.
Miss them, definitely.
Yeah, the things that are happening, like if a kid's sitting there like this, then something's going on and you're not mm-hmm. sure. Is it because they got a backache? Is it, so you have to, you know, we can make these sort of notice or not notice just mm-hmm. the different things that are happening. With your teen.
And our lives get busy and we just don't tend to notice unless right. we, yep.
Right.
So. All right. So we're ready for the next slide?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. All right.
So we're helping the teen deal with behaviors that are unobserved by the parent. So things like your child's self-doubt,
right.
their obsessive thought, their feelings of depression, their melancholy. Mm-hmm. So then we have a little acronym here of we want, you know, these are the things that are deeper down. What their
yeah.
sense of dignity, their sense of whether or not they can take on the educational thing. You know, sometimes you're dealing with that stress factor where kids, they might want to try, but what if I fail? So you've got this whole and
right.
learning how to empower them.
Mm-hmm.
But also to teach them how to empower themselves and how to, mm-hmm. to come out of the I can't do, I can't do, I can't do to, well, actually, I can do,
right.
and I did do, and I accomplished,
mm-hmm.
and getting them to think more positively. So teaching them these behaviors that are behind the scenes that sometimes we as parents don't think about. It's interesting, like when you look again at things biblically, I didn't put the verse in here, but you've got
mm-hmm.
Paul. Paul says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Yeah.
And David, you know, why are you cast down on my soul? Why are you disquieted in me? Hope in God, for I shall yet praise him. So there's, you know, there's verse after verse in the Bible that teaches us to positively focus our thoughts
mm-hmm.
on God and the strength that he gives us to accomplish. And we can teach our teens to do this.
Right, exactly.
They're real good at the broken record of, well, I can't, and I failed, and I didn't, and I missed.
And then the progress doesn't even start.
Right.
It's getting over that hurdle of their, you know, what they're thinking that's stopping them.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was depressed when I was a teen, so I totally get that. I dealt with a lot of depression in my young years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, with self-management, we want them to be able to generalize their behavior and transfer
yes.
that behavior from one situation to another. So this one, we're going to develop
mm-hmm.
a little bit more on these slides here. What is generalization? We want them to be able to transfer skills in at least three different ways. So
mm-hmm.
those three ways. Over time, from 1 week to the next, across settings, from the kitchen to the living room to the dining room, we're going to pick up our stuff behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And then to other behaviors. So in spelling, we learn how to spell these words so that when we're doing our free written expression, we're spelling them right. And in math, we can do the math skills for math class, but when you take it over
right.
to science or chemistry or music,
mm-hmm.
I didn't even put music in there. Music is actually very mathematical.
Yep.
And then right on into life skills.
Yeah. And cleaning your room is the same as cleaning the house bathroom. And
Yeah. And if you go to somebody else's house, you're not going to leave their house a mess either. And yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I just remember when my kids were little, you know, that whole, you know, we had the house rules, but when you went outside the house, that was all gone. You know, you have a child on the spectrum and they're like, oh no, the same rules. That's why I liked traveling in our camper, because I only had to teach them that the rules at home were the same as the camper. And wherever the camper went, the rules came with us.
Yeah.
It was a little easier.
I have one really fun.
Oops, that's my phone.
Sorry.
No problem. I used to do some different things with my students where when we got ready to walk out of the classroom, I would say, okay, folks, how are we going to act when we walk in the hall? You know, and just
mm-hmm.
build that in ahead of time. And I told them one time, I said, you know, when we're walking down the hall, are they looking at me? Do they care about me as the teacher? No, they're looking at you to see how you're behaving. And what was really fun about that, I had a group of teen boys lined up against the wall, waiting for their turn in the bathroom one day. And the administrators came walking right down beside us, and the guys were standing there quietly. They were kind of laughing a little bit, but they were being good. And they start walking down the hall, and the administrators go by, and they stopped in the middle, and they looked at them, and they kind of glanced at me for a second, and then they looked at them, and they're like, "Wow, look at you guys. You're standing there. You're acting appropriately. I can't get over this." So then after they left, the guys were like, "You're right, Miss Mead. They aren't paying attention to you. They are looking at us." And we, you know, they learned from that situation,
right,
to take ownership that, wow, people do notice my behavior, and they will point it out when I'm doing the right thing. So
not just when you're doing the wrong thing. That's
not
great.
Just in the classroom, but in the halls, and we've done that in restaurants where people, you know, we would take them out for field trips, and the people would come to us and say, "Wow, you know, these kids are so well behaved." And they got the idea that it wasn't, it's not the teacher that's well behaved. It's they actually, you know, were noticing the kids.
Yeah, that's great.
Just those ownership. So then I've got several examples here. If you want to plan a trip to the mall or planning a trip somewhere else, and I'd put that scheduler thing at the end. People to look at with a whole lot more things on it, things to think about when, you know, how do you act in public? How do you treat people? Do you clean up after yourself? All those kinds of questions.
It's really hard. I know I was talking with an organization. They train teens who are transitioning from, you know, classroom type environments to job environments. And they said they have a really hard time because they mostly work with autism spectrum adults, young adults. And why did this person react to me when I you know, treated them like my buddy at school? And it's like, well, a working relationship is very different than a school relationship. And so, so those types of things are definitely things that have to be worked on and understood.
Sure. So once you get your child, your teen to self-manage, then you as a parent are more efficient as well. So then, like, we have one illustration from a regular classroom, but go ahead to the next slide.
Okay.
I think it's that one, isn't it? Allows more efficient home teaching. Yeah.
Right.
So the parent generally have been used to taking the responsibility for the overall management of their behavior, choosing delivering the reinforcers, implementing their self-management plans, doing their schedule, evaluating their behavior. And that gets very tiring after a while.
Right, exactly.
So then we want to switch gears to the child is doing these things. Then we just cited a school example here where, you know, they had arithmetic problems and the teacher spending all this time grading and they're spending all this extra time. But in the final analysis, when they got the students to self-score, the positive thing about getting students to self-score, and I mean, you can do this in the homeschool setting. Some parents think this is cheating, but it's actually not. If they go back and they have to go and check their work first, then they learn to start figuring out, oops, I got that one wrong. Can I figure out how I got it wrong and why I got it wrong?
Yes, you so much want them to do that.
Yes. Yeah, so if you're letting them going back and checking and they've got it wrong, it's not okay to just say it's wrong and move on. It's okay, you got it wrong. Do you know why you got it wrong? So it ends up you get to spend more time doing that stuff than spending all this time just going down and checking things.
Right, because you want mastery. You don't just want to get through that lesson.
Right.
That's so, so important. Thank you for pointing that out.
Okay, so self-management or adulting, again, is the ultimate goal of education. Let's buzz down through here.
Okay.
We want our children to grow up and eventually be independent citizens, not immature, dependent, you know, they can't make their own choices. We want them to be able to manage their behavior.
Right, exactly.
All right, so there's a bunch of different things that happen with self-management. So there's a whole combination of different things that happen here. And it's looking like, go ahead and put them all up on the screen. They're coming in. And you had mentioned this already, that autistic children need this stuff taught more than... Oops.
I need to go back.
It's okay.
Let's see if I can figure that out. Oh, here we go. There.
they need to be taught these skills more than the other people. So I thought when I was teaching this in the classroom, I would actually set a little timer here and we would teach the students just how long they were paying attention. And you can do this if you want to teach your kids to notice how long they spend on an iPad or something like that. So I've just set the little timer here for 4 minutes and we're just going to keep on talking. And at four minutes, we're going to go, are we still on task? Did we deviate and go off to something else? Did we get distracted somehow? And in the classroom, I would teach the students to just put a little tick mark. And we would keep on teaching, but at that, just the little timer would go off at 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. And they would check off, was I paying attention? Was I doing what I was supposed to? Or did I just float off and go do something else in my brain?
That's great, yeah.
So this holds up. So I'm going to just hit that four button, and we'll see how we're doing in 4 minutes.
Okay.
So self-observation is, am I actually paying attention? Mm-hmm. Self-cueing is, oops, I got to stop and pay attention now. Self-monitoring is the little checklist thing that I'm talking about.
Okay.
And then self-reinforcement is the different things that you do to reward yourself for doing the stuff that you need to get done and your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So let me give you an example that covers the first three. I had a student at one point who, I've generalized it to something else besides academics, but I had a student who didn't understand personal space. So if he was talking to you, he was like that, right up in your face. And so I had a conversation with him and I said, do you like it when I get up in your face? He's like, no. I said, well, you're not observing that you're doing this with other people. So what I need you to realize is there's this thing called personal space. So from the tip of your fingers to your elbow is about how far away you should be from people when you're doing things. So I watched him. And later that week, he's sitting there and he gets all excited. And then he goes, oh, and so he puts his hand out. So he's observing it. He cued himself that he needed to stop. And then he used that little monitoring thing of his elbow to step back. And then he kind of glanced over at me. And so he got that reinforcement of the teacher going, yeah, I saw you do that.
Huh?
So that gives you a quick other way of seeing how this can work in other behaviors as well.
Right. And I love that visual that you gave him and something that he has on him all the time. His arm. I mean, so he can figure that space out very easily. Yeah, that's great.
So then some of these other things we're going to talk about going on here, we'll have some more examples, but that's just a quick one just on a behavioral side.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. So we're kind of moving on to, teaching.
So now we're going to teach them the self-management. So it's one thing to say, we want them to self-manage, but now we can't assume they're just going to do it. There are things that you have to do to be able to teach them how to take on this. So there's usually at least three steps in this process where you're teaching them how to self-record, to self-evaluate, and self-reinforce. The first one is very, very important. It's this rationale thing. Like, I can sit there and say, you need to clean up your room. You need to, or you could, or whoever.
But why? The proverbial why.
But why? And you know what? It's one of those times when you actually, as a parent, step back and say, well, you tell me why.
Yeah.
Why is this important? What makes this important? And sometimes natural things will happen that will make a student go, oh, that's what she was trying to say by. And so getting them to the point where they're actually the ones answering the why instead of you, because that again is making them take
it's
on
reinforcing and
you want to be able to go to the mall. Okay, well, if you want to go to the mall, here's the steps for going to the mall. That's why I gave you that planning, the trip planning chart that's farther on down. Why do we want to learn how to do all these things? Well, we had I had a girl who planned this whole trip. She was actually in her early 20s, but her parents assumed that she had this stuff figured out. She gets to a stopping point. The people where she's going don't know when she's supposed to arrive. She gets to a certain stopping point and discovers that the bus that she thought was there, the last bus had left 10 minutes before. So she actually couldn't make the connection another hour and a half away to get where she was headed. So she ended up having to call Sally, Susie, Betsy. It was a mess for a little bit because they didn't know where she was. So we don't want to make these assumptions. We want to teach them ahead of time how to get where they're going. And modeling, and modeling it as you go. Like I think you were talking about taking. Was it you that said that? Maybe I was talking to a parent this week about taking their child out and actually showing them in the grocery store and helping them do the grocery shopping or something like that.
Oh yeah, that's well. And my kids right now, I'm they're cooking. I'm giving cooking lessons because I can't lift anything after my surgery. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I'm modeling for them. I mean, they've seen me cook and they know how to cook a few things, but they're learning a lot right now because out of necessity, if they want what they want for dinner, they have to be my hands.
Right.
So that's important, but yeah, that's another way. And yeah,
So that's the
usually.
4 minute mark that my little alarm just thing went off.
Ah,
So
yes.
if we were teaching in a class, then and a bunch of people were watching us, I would say, okay, were you paying attention, or did you look to your phone, or did you go off and do something else? What's your attention look like at this point?
Right. Yep.
So that's kind of an example of the cueing strategy, where you're learning
That's
or
great.
observing the observing
Yeah.
strategy. You're learning how to track how much time you're spending here or there, or whether you're paying attention or not. You can pick a little timer like that for an hour and discover, wow, I'm really spending too much time over here and not enough time over there.
I can see that being really helpful. You know, we have those students that tend to get very distracted, and you'll get up from the table just to do. As a homeschooler, we have things around us, not like, you know, a classroom where you can shut things out. You know, you have another child that needs to be dealt with, and you leave for a second and you come back and they're not even at the math table, you know, the table doing
Right.
math where you left them. And
Right.
so having that timer is kind of that secondary, oh, are we on track? Are we doing what we're, that would be a really
And
good
what
strategy.
when you do this, you're presenting it in a fun way. It's like, hey, let's just have fun for the next hour. You know, we're going to just do our routine and let's see how much we stay on task this hour, and or how we get distracted. And we'll just set the timer. It's going to go off every 4 minutes,
It's a
and at that 4 minute
discovery.
mark, it becomes a fun little discovery thing. So they learn to observe, and then from there you go, ah, what can we change or do differently, and teach them how to evaluate their time.
That's great.
So that's just some examples of how you do that.
And I think you had some more examples on your next slide. Let's see.
Right. So the self-contracting own it chart, I knew I wasn't going to have time to explain that one, but what I've done with that's a whole different one. It's on my Christian special ed page. And I've put the
Okay,
link
and we'll
in with the
share
stuff
links
that
with
people
that.
can get at the end. But that chart teaches a student how to meet a deadline. You know, how you plan it from the back up, and the amount of time it's going to take them to do each step in between. And I take the
Yes.
time with that. I take 45 minutes to explain how that chart works and how to teach your team how to do that.
Great. Yeah, I
So
think
that's
you
that
have a
one.
YouTube video on that one.
Yes, that's
Yes,
the,
I think I watched that one. Yeah.
And there's a chart that you can download off of that one too. So yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, so the mnemonic strategy I think is on the next page, but go ahead and keep on
Okay.
going down.
All
Because
right.
I just taught you the self-monitoring one. That was with the timer thing.
Oh, yes. Okay. Great.
Okay, and then the budgeting, the Dave Ramsey thing. There's two different things you can use for the Dave Ramsey one. So I'll just hold this up real quick. There's
Yeah.
this one for the teens that are a little bit more advanced that can read, and they've got a really nice workbook that goes with it. For
Yeah, and that's going to be
your
coming out on
teens.
the blog that we have coming out, I think, next Wednesday on our
Yeah.
website.
But even if you have kids who are they might be teens, but they're still struggling. They do have a younger kit, but it's a simpler version for your dis but still very, very helpful. And I had this was an older one. I didn't get a chance to check on the website, but Edwards Jones put out a budgeting thing that you can teach your teens for budgeting. So these again just some different ideas for that kind of setting.
Yeah, there's so many things that, you know, we get so focused on those core subjects, and that we forget that, you know, those life skills have to be put in there too, as we want them to be independent across the board, not just in academics. And
Right. A really good resource that you can get really like for a dollar because it's an older textbook, but it's still very, very good is this one that I put at the bottom here by Mercer and Mercer, Teaching Students with Learning Problems. Their sixth edition, like it's an old one, so it's only like a penny book online, so you won't pay the shipping. But that thing in the back of each chapter is there's tons of these kinds of strategies. Like for math, for spelling, for reading, for writing. So if you get a copy of that book, you'll find that as a really helpful resource.
That's great.
Because each
Yeah.
chapter has a whole section at the back that has even more of these kinds of tools.
Wow, that's a
So.
great resource to have. So, we're about halfway through our
Okay.
program, so we're gonna let Ruth take a break, and we're gonna hear from our sponsor, Seven Sisters Homeschool, and then we'll have Ruth come back and continue sharing all the resources that she has, as well as some more some tips and tricks and hints and all that wisdom that she has to share. So, so I'm going to, let's see, I have to do that, and I have to bring up my screen sharing again, which is, but we do want to thank Seven Sisters Homeschool. If you do not know about Seven Sisters Homeschool, I do want to tell you a little bit about them. They are a no-busy ebook curriculum with 20-plus year veteran homeschool moms. So these moms are six moms who homeschooled their own kids. They wrote this curriculum for their own children, doing kind of co-ops together. I got to meet some of them this last fall. They are a hoot, and they write real life curriculum that works in your home. And they cover subjects from career exploration to drama and electives, financial literacy, literature guides, social skills, social sciences, a whole lot more, like psychology. And yeah, there's a lot of really unique classes that you aren't going to find anywhere else, written specifically for homeschool, and they even give you the credit hours. Everything is there. So yes, definitely check them out. And actually, Vicki Tillman from Seven Sisters will be my guest next week, so we'll hear more about that then. But thank you, Seven Sisters, for sponsoring this broadcast. And and so we are going to bring Ruth back, and we're going to continue about talking about tools for helping your teen to self-manage. And Ruth has already shared some great resources with us. I'm just going to bring up her, yep, there we go. We've got your slides and we've got you back now.
Okay.
So welcome back, Ruth. And if you missed the beginning of this broadcast, you know, at the end, if you're watching us live, you can watch a replay. You can watch it on Facebook, on YouTube, on Periscope. It'll all be there. And then the same episode will come out in our podcast on Sunday as well. So lots of different places to get this great content. So we were talking about, you know, some examples, and I know you referenced a couple things, this resource, Teaching Students Learning with Learning Problems, that parents can probably just Google anywhere, and then some of the resources that you've created, which if you are looking at the feed on Facebook, there's a link that we shared earlier that you can click on to download this whole list of resources that Ruth is talking about. And if you're on YouTube, it's actually saved on the YouTube description already of this video. So you can find those in both places. And we'll make sure. And if you're listening to the podcast, just go to our YouTube channel. That's probably the easiest way to find it. All right, so we're going to talk about mnemonics, it looks like.
Mnemonics and strategy training, right, and error monitoring and writing. It was interesting because I was actually consulting with a parent here a month ago, and there are things that I've said this so much over the years that I start to take things for granted. So now I've switched back to, I've got to stop. I've just got to say it. And then if they already know, they already know.
Right.
But this one, so this one's actually on the next slide. So if you want to pop to the next slide.
Yep, definitely.
And I've said this to several different parents and they've said, I've never heard of this. I wish I had heard of this before. So you want to teach your teen to become a cop of their spelling. And or their writing skills. So there's four, it's an acronym, and you can come up with different kinds of mnemonics with this one, but this one's, there's, again, in that Mercer and Mercer book that I've referenced there, they've got tons more of these kinds of acronyms that you can use to help students. But this is one that's helpful for everybody for writing. So they write out a piece. The first thing they're going to go back and look at is their capitalization. Go find all the capitals, make sure they've got all their capitals right. Then they're going to go back and check the punctuation and see what the punctuation is. And then go check your spelling. And this is where you teach your teens, if the word is out there like on the board or in the magazine or in the book that you're or working with, go back and check the spelling, like check your spelling with what's in the book, and double check to make sure you've got it right. And then the last one is your overall organization and overall appearance of what you've written. So each time a child does some kind of a writing project, they can go back and just literally check off each one of those. I checked all the capitals, I checked my punctuation, I checked my spelling, and then I looked at the overall organization.
And it's almost like the, I'm trying to remember what, you know, it's what you give your student to kind of, you know, coax them through it, but yeah, again, it's that independence, because you don't have to be there saying, oh, did you check this? Oh, did you check that? And did you check this too? And
right.
It's what they can go back to on their own.
Yeah, and I actually created, and this parent loved it. She immediately went and created one for her teen son, because that was her biggest struggle, was that my son doesn't write. I said, well, or he struggled with XYZ. So I said, just create this. So she did. She created a little sticker card like that and laminated it. And then each time he did a writing assignment, he just could go with the write on wipe off marker.
Oh, yeah.
And check it off each time. And to make sure that he had done the stuff, and then she could come behind him and say, and this is where, again, you pick your battles. Sometimes we get so concerned about every single word has got to be spelled right that we're missing the fact that we really, he wasn't writing at all, but he just wrote this awesome story. So let's focus on the content and then maybe pick one of these areas to fix instead of fixing them all.
Right.
And then once he's fixed that one, then the next time you can fix that one plus another one and build that way to teach that independence too.
Right. That's definitely. You're not going to get it all right away. That's
right.
A good thing to point out.
Otherwise they do quit. They don't want to write anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If we expect perfection with just one aid, that it's too much. Yeah.
Right. And especially with kids who struggle, it's got to be built a little bit at a time. So this idea originally came from Deschler and the folks at University of Kansas. So that's why I wanted to give credit for that.
Definitely.
So then we kind of did this self-monitoring thing already with the little timer.
With the timer.
But I wanted to show that, and I could have kept that going again for every 4 minutes, but I thought, I think I gave enough of an example on that one where you do. You set a clock, and you think about a specific behavior. Was I paying attention? Now, for us, it wouldn't have been so much was I paying attention, but if there was people viewing in the audience, and you were trying to teach your teen to pay attention to something when they're learning a lesson, you and I are engaged, but the people watching us may or may not be. So it would have been
Doing dishes or
right. It would have been a good check for them. Yeah, did I actually understand what they just talked about this last 4 minutes? Or, you know, maybe depending on the teen, it might be 2 minutes. Can I handle 2 minutes of understanding?
That's a very good point. It's going to be different for each individual.
So you're gonna check and pick what the behavior is that you want. First, is it paying attention? Is it understanding? Is it comprehension? Because, you know, kids will start reading down through script, and they'll read, and then you say, so what did you read?
I don't know.
Words?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And teaching them to stop and go, wait, did I even understand what I just read? Can I can I say something about it again?
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's those checks. If they don't have them internalized, they just don't happen. And then you get to the end of an assignment, and there's so many things that have gone wrong that you can't backtrack and figure it out. But if you think of it from the forefront, like you're telling us to do, it makes it a little easier, because you're catching those things before they happen instead of trying to decipher what's happening from the back end.
Right. There's a program called PALS, Peer Assisted Learning Strategies, and like when it comes to reading, I didn't put this in the slides, but this is just a kind of a quick freebie for you.
Yeah.
When it comes to reading, you teach them to predict ahead of time. And then they read a paragraph, and then they ask themselves, did what I just predicted happen? And then it's yes or no, and then can you summarize what happened in that paragraph in like 10 words or less? And that's a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
Sometimes, because you have to think, let's see, the cat fell off the car and hit its head. You know, so you have to think about the paragraph and what was actually in it. So it forces the comprehension.
Right.
And then double checking. Okay, so that was that paragraph. Now, what am I going to predict for the next one? So here's an interesting illustration of that. We're in Ethiopia for the missions trip, because we went over and did some teacher conferences over there.
Yeah.
And that was really fun to do that. But here in this country, so we were reading this book, and the first page was we were on a safari and we saw one elephant. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then we got to the next page, and then we went on the safari a little bit farther and we saw two giraffes. Okay. So then we went a little bit farther on and we saw three hippos. So then we stopped and we said, okay, so what do we see so far? Okay. Mm-hmm. So now predict what's going to happen next. Now I'm going to do this with you. What are you going to predict is going to happen next?
I think you're going to find four of some kind of animal.
Right. That's what you and I would think. Okay. So here's what happened in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. These teachers are sitting there and they said, we're going to have four people dead.
What?
Yeah, you would do that. Because what most people don't know is the hippopotamus is the most dangerous animal in Africa. But most people don't know that. But they're automatically thinking, oh! So they're going in a whole different direction. Now, are they wrong? No, it's a prediction based on their experience. So they learn from it. Are you wrong? No, it's a prediction based on your experience. So it's teaching reading comprehension is not just about being right about what's on the next page. It's about being able to think and evaluate why my thinking was different than what's on the next page.
Right.
So those are some of those self-monitoring kinds of questioning comprehension
tips. Well, and that brings in a whole bunch of different things, because not only are you trying to align your thinking with an author, but then you can bring up subjects with these students about how their thinking is so different from other people that they interact with as well. So I can see that just that one question leading to a lot of really good conversations that can help with, you know, self-management in a lot of different areas.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you realize that you don't understand?
Mm-hmm.
You realize, like, I was working with a girl in the middle school, and she would never put her eyes on the page. And I would say, you need to read. She said, well, I am reading. But her idea of reading was listening to the rest of us read the story. And then once we did it, then she could answer it. And I said, actually, that's listening comprehension. Mm-hmm. That's not reading. Reading is you're looking at the words and finding out what they are without anybody else saying anything. She went, and she's a middle school student. She was a middle school student. So again, we had made the assumptions along that and nobody had really stopped and asked her that specific question.
Mm-hmm.
So just those little check things.
Well, I think unfortunately with students who do have extra learning needs, we do make a lot more assumptions about what they understand and what they don't understand, instead of getting down to the meat and potatoes of, you know, the basics understandings. And a lot of what you're telling us to do is look closer.
Right.
And really dig down to those and don't just assume that what you're interpreting is what's going on.
Right. Asking the questions. I actually did this as a questions prick the conscience, accusations harden the will. And especially when you're working with teens. And that's, I don't know who coined that originally, but I heard that
so
and
true.
I've quoted it so many times. But the thing that was interesting to me when Jesus was teaching is how many times he asked questions. And I actually did a project here this winter in the middle of, you know, not being able to get out and around because of snow, where I looked up every question that Jesus asked in the New Testament.
Wow.
And there are over 280 of them.
Hmm.
So he was constantly asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite verses is the one in Proverbs that says, he who answers a matter before he hears it, it's a shame and a folly to him. So if we learn to ask the questions of our teens and then teach them how to ask the questions themselves, then they progress.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus' most common question was, have you not read?
Mm.
So, you know, if your teen's saying, why do I have to read this? Well, Jesus thought reading was very, very important. So, yeah.
So good. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right. So, so we're going to talk about what this training kind of looks like next.
Right. So let's take some steps here. So the first thing, you're going to tell your teen that you want him to help himself. Then you're going to teach him to use, like I've used the example of the self-recording card, but or like I could switch gears. I've got this on here, but you could go to the grocery list and say, I want to teach you how to go get some basic groceries. And that grocery list is part of what I've given you. Or I want to teach you how to make a trip to the mall and the kind of things you got to think about. Or if you're going to go on a camping trip with your buddies, here's the packing list. Here's the stuff that you need to do for that. So you put the stuff in front of him. You teach him how to do this. Then get him to go and try to do some of it. Show him what to do with it. And then come back and say, okay, let's just go down through the list again together with your packing list. We'll just say the packing list for right now. Okay, so do you have, can you kind of point out, and the first time through that, oh, no, I missed the socks, or no, I didn't get the flashlight, or, you know, whatever. But in time, they'll learn that that checklist becomes very, very helpful to them for a lot of kids.
Right.
The one thing I will say with this screen that I do want to focus on is the attention and the inattention, the difference between paying attention and not paying attention. Realizing whether or not you're paying attention is key. You know, they could be sitting there doing this number. Yeah, what'd you say, Mom? Yeah. And then you just ask them a question and they can't answer it. And you're like, okay, that's not paying.
Right. My husband tests me on that. He all of a sudden throws things in that are like totally stupid. And I'm like, I hear that, honey.
Oh my. Yeah. So one of the questions that we as parents automatically assume, and teachers do this all the time, and I've done this in parent training sessions. I've done this, I used to travel for the university, and I drove all the way out to California. And like I said, I went to Ethiopia to do teacher training there. But we did this one session where we talk about what is listen. Everybody goes, okay, what's listen? So I'm going to ask you this question. How would you define listen?
Being able to process what the other person is saying and to re-articulate it.
And is it just to articulate?
No, but understand as well.
Be able to do something with it. Now, here's what's interesting to me. You're rare because most people will go,
Well, I spend a lot of time listening, so.
right. But yeah, that whole point of listening is, you know, we'll say to a kid, I need you to listen to me. And I'm listening. Okay. So what does listen mean? I'm hearing words. No.
Right, no.
Listen means that you are taking the information in, like you said. You are processing it and understanding it. And you can articulate it and do something with it, which is actually 1 John 1. If you go back and read 1 John 1, those first five verses. You hear things, you do things, and then you teach and you proclaim and you do something with it.
Right.
So that is the whole process of listening. And we as parents actually have to teach our kids what that means, and especially the teens.
They're so self-absorbed. And so it's.
And you can do it in fun ways. I mean, instead of jumping down their throat, I've had all kinds of fun ways that I've taught kids how to do this thing of learning how to listen. But
Oh, that's good. No, I
can
like
they?
That.
Can they? So that's where that point is. Can they repeat the instructions? And then can they demonstrate the whatever skill we've taught them how to do?
Right. Yeah. And those are higher level actions with what you've given them. And oftentimes we almost stop at the just at the giving them one and two. And then why don't you have it all together? And we don't realize that there's these other things that are needed in order to solidify and get them to process them at a deeper level and to integrate them.
And some teens just need to hear it.
Yeah.
Some teens need to see it being done. Some teens need to write it down. It's interesting, from the time I was a teenager, my mom would want me to go to the grocery store to pick up the groceries, and she would stand in front of me and she'd go, okay, I need you to get da 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 da, and she'd be reading it down, and I couldn't see the list. And I learned very young, it was interesting to me, I would say, Mom, you have to hand me the list. I've got to visually see it, and then I can absorb what you need me to get. I couldn't take it in. I couldn't take it in just listening. So learning what there's, and actually teaching them that I've had teenagers that I've worked with where I've said, do you know what your strength is? Are you a visual learner? Are you an auditory learner? Are you tactile kinesthetic? And I've actually got another chart that I didn't put in with all this stuff. I've got lots of charts, but I didn't want to overwhelm people.
Right. Yeah.
But that they can go down through and do a quick self-assessment on what their learning style is. And then they go, oh, so that, and then when the parent does it and a teen does it and they compare with each other, and I actually used this on one of the homeschooling 101 YouTubes that I did, where you have that discussion with them and compare it. So then you're a visual learner, so you do everything this way, but your child is an auditory learner.
Right. I know, and it takes you totally off guard.
Right. So then they have to learn how to process things the way that works for them and teach them that that's okay, that it's different than what you do. So.
Yeah. We have a question from one of our viewers. Sure. Karen asks, so what are some fun ways to teach them how to listen? Because we want it to be fun instead of frustrating.
Oh, boy. I would have activities during the day where if they were listening, if they were paying attention to certain little clues, then they could win a prize for something. So I might say a cue word through the middle of something. So, or if I actually had some charts where they could win, they could earn points for how many times I caught them listening. So I could be going along doing my thing and kind of glance over and catch them listening and go, ah, you're listening, check. And so once they got five checks, then they got the popcorn party or the ice cream party. Mm-hmm. Teenagers still like the popcorn and ice cream.
Exactly.
So those are a couple things that I would do.
And you talk in a couple slides here about incentives too. So I think we will probably come around to that a little bit more. And we have also Agnes, who says she's good morning, watching from Davao City Walton Elementary School's bed.
Oh, wonderful.
So it's morning for you, it's evening for us. So I'm assuming you're on the other side of the globe from us.
Yes.
But thank you for joining us.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. So modification for using it in a group setting, that's something we're now doing a whole lot of right now, but can you touch on that for just a little bit?
Happening. Sure. Now I guess I got ahead of myself a little bit because I talked a little bit about what does attention, what does listen mean?
Mm-hmm.
So listen actually means, and especially in our modern world, kids think that this is listening. Yeah, mom, what'd you say, huh? No, it's not. And they think that they can multitask, but I mean, there's a ton of research out there that proves that you cannot multitask.
Yeah.
Nobody can do it effectively. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to me because I was reading this article and it was actually talking about people driving and how if you look at your phone, it's a loss of something like 27 seconds, just glancing at your phone and off. And the thing that was interesting to me is how many times that happens in your house or for me in the classroom. We would assume that our kids could come back. But what happens is that 27 seconds, your focus is actually literally gone for a minute and a half. I've forgotten exactly when I read the article, what happens in your brain and the fact that it has to regroup because it processed the distraction. Mm-hmm. Then it has to get itself back again and then get back to it. So you've actually lost triple time with not paying attention. So again, teaching, it's actually looking at a parent's face or for some kids, some people can't look at somebody else's face because it gives them too much feedback, but looking somewhere else close to their face and demonstrating that they're hearing what's going on, being able to say back what's being said and demonstrate, that skill.
Yeah, there's a lot involved in that process, definitely.
Yes. So, I think we kind of covered a fair amount of that on the other.
Right. And Karen had another question. She said, what do you do with a teen who's suddenly become very negative towards his schooling? He's lost his love for learning. Oh, I had one of those. I have a whole article about that.
I would, my first question would be, what's made him lose like what happened. But then that's probably, that's another whole, like you said, that's another whole article, but that's a very good question.
Yeah, if you go back, Karen, there was an article we highlighted last week. You'll find the post, just what happens when your teen diverts your homeschool high school plan. Read that, because that's what my middle son did. I mean, he just got his first full-time job today. So, you know, there is success in that, but he had to take control of his schooling. He was done with what I wanted to do, and it actually was a very successful turn for us. So definitely check that out. I did want to give you time to talk about reinforcers and the difference from bribes, because I know a lot of parents will say, I can't use that because it's just teaching my kid what that I can buy them out to do school.
And you know what? This is where, when I taught my behavior management class at the university level, the first assignment that I gave them on the very first day was they had to go look up the crowns in the New Testament. There are six crowns in the New Testament. Mm. And the crowns are given by God for behavior. God is the one who instituted the reward system. Now, here's the difference between rewards and bribes. A bribe is something that you give somebody to do something wrong. A reward is something that is given for right behavior. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that a lot from people. Now they just should know better. They should just do. Well, okay, do you go to work and do your job and you don't need a paycheck?
Well, I do, but...
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that's a whole different story.
Right. I put a lot of stuff out there for free myself, too, because God has had interesting ways of meeting my needs.
Right. Yep.
Because my goal has been to just reach out and to try to minister to people and help people, and I've got other people behind the scenes.
But there are rewards that come from that, just internally, from helping people and things like that. Yeah,
absolutely. There certainly are. And God's keeping track of that in heaven, too. Yeah. But no, like God is the one who introduced the reward system.
Mm.
That's been way back in the Bible, you know. And if you look in Deuteronomy, I think it's 20, and I can't pull the exact reference out of my head right this second. But there's a whole passage that God says in Deuteronomy, if you will do this, then you'll get this. If you'll do this, you'll get this. If you do this.
Oh, yeah.
But if you do these kinds of bad things, then you're going to get this, 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 and this.
Mm-hmm.
So that was in the Old Testament, but then he brought it into the New Testament with the crown of life, the crown of rejoicing, the crown of the shepherd's crown, the pastor's crown. So there's specific crowns that God gives for specific behaviors. So it's worth, you know, take the time as a family and look up, just go and get a Bible dictionary or Bible concordance and look up those crowns and see what they are and how God rewards us in the Word of God for what we do. So there's legitimacy to rewards and reward systems. And that's a whole other talk on how you set that up and do that. But
And I know this is a point about honesty is really good too, that you put in your slides.
Yeah, the whole self-recording thing, you start teaching your teen how to self-record. And if they're not being honest about it, then you basically say, who's losing out here? You know, you can tell me till you're blue in the face that, yeah, you checked down through this entire list, but did you really? You know, and who's going to miss out if you didn't take care of things?
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
So then we wean the student. Because we all eventually want to work ourselves out of a job if that's possible, right?
Right. So, and that's where, you give them one step. Okay, teach them how to observe things, and then from then on, they get to observe themselves. Then teach them how to do the cueing, and then from then on, they got to cue themselves. And then teach them how to do the actual and then the chart, and then the,
Right.
So you work your way through it and take off each section. But then teach them to self-reward, for sure.
Right. Yeah. That's got to come from inside, and that's where you started this whole conversation about that intrinsic versus the extrinsic rewards. And so important. So.
And there's another verse that talks about that same thing where you, each man, I think it's in Ecclesiastes, where everybody has that joy in the ownership of doing their work well.
Mm-hmm.
So then these are just some of the forms, and we kind of talked about those.
Right. And so if you if you found that link on the Facebook feed or on the YouTube description, that link will take you to Ruth's website, and you can enter your information in and download those. That there's a whole page with all of these different forms on there that she's created, and it's an easy way to access those. So
and links to other resources as well.
Right. Yeah. And I know on the last page you had just all of your Ruth is everywhere, so you can find her on our YouTube channel, and she's on our YouTube channel. You have the 101 homeschooling series that you created, just kind of I think when COVID started. Was that correct?
Right.
Yeah. And then you've got your Facebook page and a whole lot of other things. So lots of good.
And I'm open for consulting if people, you know, can contact me and we can.
Yes, Ruth is one of our approved SPED homeschool consultants. So you can find her on our website. So, if, you know, then that's the thing I think parents need to know is that you don't have to homeschool alone. A lot of parents will consult with therapists as well as educational consultants when working with their students, because it's really difficult sometimes to see your child accurately the way they should be taught, and it's nice to bring in a third party to give you a different perspective.
By wise counsel wage your war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, you definitely want to do that. And we want to thank you, Ben, for finding us. He said, thanks for the informative webinar. I've been looking for a webinar on SPED. Well, we have a lot of them. We've been doing this for 2 years, so we got to look back on our YouTube channel and our podcast. And it's harder to find these videos on Facebook, but that's why we have them in those places as well. So. But yeah.
Thank you so much for letting me be here. And
you are so welcome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing all this information. I know I've already had two teens turn into adults. I've got my third teen, and you know, this is really good information to remember. As she's still learning to self-regulate too. it doesn't even matter if they're in SPED or not. The teens just have a difficulty with this topic.
Right.
Some more than others, but yeah. So thank you all for joining us, and I want to thank Seven Sisters for sponsoring this episode of SPED Homeschool Conversations. Next week we will have Vicki Tillman from Seven Sisters with us, and she is going to be talking about, Vicki's a counselor as well as a life coach, and we're going to be talking about, let's talk about teens and mental health. So we are going to cover some probably really difficult subjects, but some very important and much needed subjects with Vicki next week. And so definitely bring your questions and invite people to that episode. And the link for that will go up tomorrow morning as far as the live link. But thanks for joining us. And thanks again, Ruth. And I hope you guys will enjoy all the resources she provides and use her as a resource for your homeschooling.
Feel free to reach out. I'd love to help any way I can.
Awesome. Well, thanks, everyone. Join us if you're still going to be around and want another hour of fun. We have Special Needs Moms Night Out starting right now. So you can find that link in our Facebook support group or in our SPED Strong Tribes. You can find all that information on our website as well. So at spedhomeschool.com. So, all right. Well, thanks again, Ruth. And thanks you all for joining us. And we'll see you again next week. Bye, everybody.
Okay. Goodbye.